right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Susskind.
My guest today is Mark Susskind. Mark is a life coach, thought leader, author, and inspirational speaker who inspires others to find more fulfillment and meaning in their life. A former successful trial attorney for many years, he integrates what it takes to be successful in the world with the inner wisdom unfolding to him through years of yoga and meditation. He's the author of The Soul of Uncertainty, a fable for our times, which I have in front of me, and it's a beautiful, wonderful book. He's also the author of Dancing on the River, Navigating Life's Challenges and Discovering the Leader Within. He is the host of the Inspire Possibility radio show. So fun to have another radio show host on the show, Mark, today. So we're going to have a lot of fun.
I think we will, and I'm so glad to be here. I know we've been planning this for a long time, so I'm excited to see what unfolds, see what we come up with.
I know. I love to just flow, and I love the fact that you have this metaphor of the river flowing for your first book. And then you have in this, the book that I have in front of me, this idea or this metaphor of the rainbow. But let's go back to, and we'll just focus on your most recent book, The Soul of Uncertainty, and kind of that moment when the light bulb went off that said, you know what, I'm going to write another book. So Mark, take us to that place.
Well, I think it started when, I don't know, when the light bulb, but just, I don't know if there was a switch. I don't think there was really a switch necessarily. But I know when the first book came out and I was I was interviewed several times, it would come up, what's your next book going to be about? And I was, this is back in 2010. And I was thinking that I just finished this book, the first book, and I'm not really thinking about another book. And I want to focus on this. Of course, in the back of my mind, then I start to go, well, if I was going to write another book, what would it be about? And I wasn't sure. I thought about, so at different times through, you know, in the next few years, I started thinking about curiosity and this idea. And I think the thing that the idea that kept coming up for me was this idea of loose ends. How in life we just have, you know, life full of loose ends. I thought about it a lot, and I thought about, you know, what if we could just become more and more comfortable with these loose ends, this not knowing. And that's, I think, really when the seed planted, not necessarily for a book, but that thought just kept going deeper into my consciousness, that idea of, hey, what about these loose ends? If only I could feel so confident that these loose ends would work out. And so that pretty much was the idea for the book. And then, you know, my radio show, I interviewed somebody who wrote a book similar, that gave me the idea. I mean, it wasn't an original idea that he had either, but the idea where a student, a seeker of the truth, meets a teacher. In everyday life. And I just love that idea. And so I went, if I write a book, what I'm going to do, I'm going to use that idea. So I came up with a working title. I think for me, I found that titles are big. So the working title that I came up with, since I love the idea of loose ends, was Loose Ends, Learning to Love Uncertainty. And that was the working title for the book. I went to a workshop about 3 years ago down at Esalen, and I did a writing workshop, And the instructor there really liked my idea for a book, but then again, you go, do I really want to jump in here and do this process? Because again, it really deals with these loose ends, with not knowing where it's going to go. So then what happened was that I started working on it, and I decided, she had a workshop for a week intensive for people that had a serious idea, and they would critique the first 40 pages. And this workshop was going to be near where I lived in Marin. So I, in my mind, I'm thinking that I'll take the workshop, be a week intensive, and that'll give me the focus to get going on this new project. So this was September of 2014, less than 3 years ago. So that was the idea. And then when I went to sign up for the workshop, it was full. And she said, well, don't worry about it. You'll probably be on the waiting list. So I had planned to go to Kauai. And I used to live in Kauai. So I went there in September. And I thought, well, I'm going to be taking this workshop in October. And they're going to. And the idea was, she was co-leading it with a woman that was an editor from New York. And I think I wanted this critique. So I just started writing it in September 2014, still with the idea loose ends, learning to love uncertainty. But then what happened was, I didn't get into the workshop. They never opened up. So, but by then I'd written about 40 pages, and that kind of got me going, this idea of loose ends, learning to love uncertainty. But the consultant that I used for my first book, he says, you know, your title smacks of nonfiction. And this is, sounds from what you told me, this is really a fable. It's not nonfiction. And I realized he was right. But I said, well, can you think of a better title? And he said, no, that's up to you. So anyway, I kept with that title. And then I was at a party, and I was talking to this guy there about coaching, about what I did as a coach. He didn't seem to be that interested in what I did as a coach, but he was impressed that I was an author. So I was telling him about my book and my other, Dancing on the River, and my new book and the title that I had. I said, although I wasn't crazy about the title, he said, just go ahead and just put the word soul in there. Everybody loves the word soul. So I said, okay, what about the soul of uncertainty? So that's where the title came from. And actually, you know, I used to write a lot of poems and songs years ago, and I had a book of poetry and songs that I call Songs and Poems for All Souls. So I've used that word before, but that's kind of, you know, this idea how it's evolved. I don't know if, you know, it's more of an evolution.
Well, I love some of the nuggets that came out of that story, Mark. I mean, one of them is that you have to just sort of trust the process, even when there's uncertainty. So it's not just the whole subject of your book, but it actually sounds like it was the process of creating the book, that you just had to be comfortable with a little bit of uncertainty, and that ties into some of the lessons that you're teaching people with the book. The other thing is, okay, so you're an attorney, you're a trained lawyer, and you've got this meditation and yoga background, but being a writer is a whole different area. And so this idea of honing your craft, you talked about this workshop. I wanted to ask a couple questions about the workshop. So it doesn't sound like this was a writer's conference that a lot of people will attend if they're aspiring authors. This was actually more of a hands-on workshop, but you didn't get in. What was the name of the workshop? I'm just curious about
it. I went to was with Laura Davis. It was at S1, and it was for writers at all levels. And what basically a lot of these workshops, what you do is there's maybe a morning session, an afternoon session, and you know, you talk a lot about the writing process, and then they'll give you writing prompts, and then you write for maybe 10 minutes, and then you share what you come up with different people in the class. And that was, so you kind of, and at the time, what's interesting is I had already published one book, Dancing on the River, Navigating Life Changes, and I had a pretty good response to that. And I've been writing my monthly newsletter, which your listeners can sign up for on my website at Inspire Possibility. The newsletter is Letters on Life. I've been writing that for 16 years. A lot of people say, oh, you're a great writer. But I kind of felt bored with my writing. I got to the point where I was kind of bored with my writing, and that's why I decided to go to this workshop. But it was for writers of all levels, and so it wasn't. No, you're right. It wasn't at a conference or anything. But what Laura said for you, those of you who have a project you want to work on, not just in general, but a particular project, you know, I'm doing an intensive, and we will critique your first 25 pages. And so to me, that was the idea, and I hadn't even started, but I'm thinking if I really want to do this, then I should take this workshop. That'll get me going. That's the best. So I didn't even deal with it until, you know, like to the middle of August. I think, okay, I'll just take this workshop and I'll get it going. And so lo and behold, it was full. I didn't get in. But I assumed I would. And because I assumed I would, I figured I don't want to, if I'm going to take it, and it was expensive. It was like a couple of $1,000s. Well, if I'm going to spend that money and take the time, I want to get the most out of it. So I need to have these 25 pages the best I can, so I could get the critique. And so that's kind of what I did. So that's kind of how it came to be.
And I think that's a great nugget there, Mark, is that we as writers, a lot of us do come from diverse backgrounds, right? You've got your attorney background. I've got my management consulting background. And a lot of those professions do involve a lot of writing, but it's a totally different process to write a book than, say, write a proposal or write a lot of these reference guides that I used to write for my management consulting clients. So this idea of investing in yourself in the writing journey, I think is a great nugget. And then the reason why I asked whose workshop it was that you were looking into is I noticed that you have an endorsement from my dear friend, Marcy Shymoff. And I know she used to do what was called Enlightened Bestseller workshops, and she would work with Janet and Chris Atwood, and it was the same kind of thing where it was a workshop and it was hands-on and there were prompts and these kinds of books, you know, these transformational, inspirational books would come out of it. So, well, let's talk about Marcy Shymoff. How did you get to know her, and what a great endorsement for your book.
I know. I've met Marcy. We have some mutual friends in Marin, the Ingrassis that run the Hoffman process, and Marcy's involved with that. She's on the advisory board, and I'm on the board of directors. So I've known Marcy through that, and I've seen her at some of their gatherings throughout. I mean, this goes over a number of years, and so when I did the advanced reader copy, then I started thinking about, or even before that, who are some people that I'd like to endorse the book? And so I reached out to Marcy, and she graciously agreed to do that.
It's really amazing. I think that's a great takeaway for listeners, is that a lot of times you feel like it's a long shot, you know, when you ask somebody who's so busy like Marcy Shymoff, but these people, these transformational leaders, are so giving. And if your message is worth getting out there, and, you know, there's this discussion about how the whole planet energy is shifting, and we're in this beautiful spot where we can really evolve as a human species. And so there actually are a lot of opportunities to get these big names that can endorse your work. And Mark, I see also John Gray. That's so cool.
Yeah, same. same kind of deal. I reached out through friends. I asked them to give my book to John and see if he, you know, to have him look at it and endorse, see if he'd be open to endorsing it. He liked what I had to say. But I had this in my mind. I mean, it's interesting because I would, you know, this idea of, I think this idea of the law of attraction, which is so overdone and hyped. And I remember there is some truth to that. I remember when I first read Think and Grow Rich, which was a predecessor of all these ideas, is that, and even before that, you know, the work of Neville was even preceded Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, is that if you have, in my mind, I had people that I would, you know, that were kind of like, I would love to have, you know, endorse my book. Of course, there are other people too that I thought would be great. You know, this idea would be great. But through contacts I had, you start to reach out. You start, for example, another big name is Temple Hayes, who, I don't know if you, have you ever read Science of Mind magazine?
No, but I know who Temple Hayes is, yes.
She's on the cover of Science of Mind magazine. She wrote a blurb on my, and by the way, both Temple was on my radio show about a year and a half ago. And so was Marcy and John Gray. They were guests on my radio show too. And but I reached out to them because and that's something I'm a big firm believer in. You know, if you don't ask, the answer is no. Right? It's guaranteed. You want people say, I want a guarantee. Well, I'll give you a guarantee. If you don't ask, the answer is no.
I love that. That's worth repeating. If you don't ask, the answer is no. That is such a great, and I think
no, but it's like people wanting a guarantee. That's what I think is kind of like, oh, okay, I'll give you a guarantee. You don't ask, you don't do it, you don't try, it's not going to happen. I mean, that is a guarantee. And I say, you know, the worst that can happen is somebody says no. But you don't focus on the no's, you focus on the yeses. And in a lot of situations, it's just that one yes. And it might take you 10 no's to get to that one yes.
And that's just this beautiful lesson in perseverance. And I think that's such an important trait for all the aspiring authors listening, is that you have to realize that a yes comes through often a series of no's, and the no's are part of the process to get to the yes. So sometimes people even go through this process of celebrating the no's because they go, okay, I'm just getting closer to the yeses. And Mark, I wanted to go back to this. You mentioned the law of attraction. And I want to just, and then we'll kind of get more into the book in a minute. But while we're on the topic of the law of attraction, and by the way, I recently reread Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, and I can't believe that book was written in like 1937 or 38. It's incredible.
I thought it was in the 50s, early 50s.
I think it was the late 30s, which is incredible. And what it shows you is that, you know, these are somewhat timeless concepts. And, you know, many people have heard of, you know, how Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen, they put on their wall, you know, that their chicken soup for the soul would be number one. And that was part of the law of attraction, was seeing that goal and feeling that goal and engaging their senses with the achievement of that goal, and that attracted that goal's achievement. So, Mark, did you employ any of the law of attraction? I know that you follow that vein, and you mentioned it can be overhyped, but I think we both believe that these things do work. So are there any examples in your book writing journey where the law of attraction really proved to be true?
There are a number of examples when it's been true, but you know, there are lots of examples where it wasn't true either. But what I say too, what I think is that, for example, let's say with affirmations, I remember, you know, about finding my life partner back in the 80s. And I used to read Catherine Ponder's book on the dynamic laws of prosperity. I used to read, I'm trying to think of her name, Creative Visualization, Shakti Gawain's book. And I used to write down my affirmations. I used to write them down in, you know, first person, second person, third person. I used to do all that. I used to even put it on a recorder and listen to myself about finding my soulmate. I used to do that all the time. Then I did a workshop called Men, Sex, and Power. And then there was another one called Women, Sex, and Power of the Women took. And it's still going on. They started by Justin Sterling. And I remember in front of the men, I said to people, you know, about declaration, I'm going to meet my soulmate by Valentine's Day. And I said that. And I met her like 4 months later. After, well, this was in October. I met her the following June, and we were married for a long time, you know, had children together. And so there is an example of declaration and imagining waking up next to that person. So there is an example. And then I, in terms of prosperity, I always, you know, this idea that you have to act as if. That's the big thing. You have to act as if. So if you do these affirmations and saying I'm, you know, making X amount of money, and then you're worried about, you know, spending a couple of bucks on a cup of coffee, or that kind of stuff, it's kind of contradictory. So your subconscious really gets contradictory messages. And I used to listen to self-hypnosis takes and stuff in the car, and I did a lot of that inner work. And it, I continue to do that. Even now, I continue to do the inner work, and so that I can go ahead and, you know, I think it's good to have dreams. It's good to have dreams. I mean, one of my dreams, I mean, I hope my book really does well. I'm invited to, you know, I visualize being invited to speak at different events. And I visualize my book doing well. I invited people, being the Oprah of internet radio. I mean, that's, I say that to people, you know, and I put it out there. And I mean, and I'll tell you another thing is there are lots of people who talk about law of attraction and their life's a mess too. So that's why I say, I think it's a little overhyped because people talk about it and their life's a mess. And I know, you know, on a personal level from different people that, you know, talk about this stuff and or just like people that talk about having an ideal relationship. And then, you know, the next time you see them, they have a different relationship. So I think that, you know, there's some truth to this, but I don't know if it's necessary. I don't necessarily go that's absolute gospel, but it certainly helps. It can't hurt.
Right. And you said something that I think is a really great takeaway for listeners, and that's that you can move beyond affirmations. Okay, so affirmations are great. They can't hurt you, but you can move beyond them to make a public declaration, right? You were talking about how when you're at a party, you're saying, you know, I'm going to be the Oprah of internet radio. You're making a public declaration, which I think is really powerful. And it kind of puts your name out there and it puts you on the line. And then you don't want to let yourself down. So listeners, if you want to write a book, what I tell people a lot is I say, all right, well then start, whether it's introducing yourself as the author of the upcoming, or maybe on your email signature, you put, you know, author of the upcoming, blah, blah, blah. And that when you step into that identity, then things really start to happen. And I think that's when the universe starts to work for you.
You know, I just want to say one more thing too about, you know, we're talking about planting seeds. Is that in when I really was serious about making a career change, I went to a career counselor. And so a lot of times career counselors and lots of people, they look at transferable skills and what your interests are. And he said, well, what do you like? This is 99. And he said, what do you like to do? And I said, well, first of all, I think I'm a little bit lazy. And I said, I like to talk on the phone, which were, you know, I continue to do, because I was talking about getting into coaching that time. I like to talk on the phone. I like to make a lot of money, you know, for not doing a whole lot of work. I like to get paid well for what I do, you know, not necessarily based on the time. I like to play music because I was a musician. And I like to play tennis, like to mountain bike, you know, so said all these things, right? What I like to do. And sure enough, you know, here it is now 18 years later. And, you know, I get well paid for what I do. I still play music. I talk on what's interesting with coaching, I didn't know this at the time, but coaching's mainly all on the phone. I mean, I have people I've never met before that are different parts of the country. And I had a coach myself for 4 years. I never met her. She lived in Santa Fe and I'm in Northern California. So But anyway, by the way, I know you're in Colorado, and that's where when I did this, this thing with the workshop, the Men, Sex, and Power, when I talked about meeting my soulmate in by Valentine's Day, the next summer, my buddy who had moved to Loveland, Colorado, came to visit his daughter and invited me to go visit him in this town of Loveland, which is near Fort Collins. So that's what I did. I went back to Loveland, and that's when I met my ex-wife, who we fell in love at the time. And so talk about that idea, about how the declaration with these men, I'm invited, right, by a friend of mine. Had I not had breakfast with him, it wouldn't have happened. But it was during that breakfast when he invites me to go to Colorado. I had never been there before. And I said, sure, yeah, I'll come visit you. It wasn't like, and I had something else planned that summer. And I decided that, I wasn't going to go to that thing I had planned, because I started thinking, why? This is one of my best friends invited me to spend a week with him. And I looked at that camp that I've been going to, and I realized, I've gone there a few years in a row. I haven't really made any close friends. And here's somebody that's been there for me forever. Why not go spend that time with him? And so I was really looking at my values, right? My values of friendship, connection, and intimacy. And I honored that by visiting my friend. And when I went there, he introduced me to my ex-wife, who I have three children with.
Oh, so it's one of those things where sometimes we say there are no coincidences. And by the way, everyone thinks I'm in Colorado because I'm always in these pictures with aspens in the background.
Yeah,
but I'm actually in Sun Valley, Idaho. So maybe there's some seed there. Maybe we'll have to meet up in Sun Valley, where we have this incredible vortex of creativity, and we have this beautiful writers conference. It's actually coming right up
really?
This summer. So yeah, no, Sun Valley is a gem of a place. But people always go, Idaho? Where's that?
I've been to Sun Valley.
Okay. That's where I am.
Ian, years ago.
Well, Mark, let's talk about your book and some of the amazing themes. In fact, I was thinking for this interview, gosh, where do I want to focus? Because there's so many great themes. And
well, what I'm thinking, Catherine, it sounds like you're uncertain.
Oh, there you go. I have to be comfortable with being uncertain about which topic. In fact, you talk about curiosity as a theme, and there's success and failure and purpose. And you were just talking about how you had seen a life coach, and here you are. You've manifested a career that allows you to do all these things that you love to do. So those are a couple of things: purpose, success and failures, curiosity. But I'll have to say, this theme of playfulness is one that I'm intrigued about diving into. I get to just kind of lay those out, and you get to choose. So what do you think we should dive into?
Well, I don't know. I don't. Have you seen the little video clip on my website or my email says Getting to Know Mark?
I have not seen that, but I'll have to watch it.
My God, it's like I was at the, I wish you could play it right now. I was at the Wisdom 2.0 conference a few years ago. And when I came out of one of the talks, there was a woman, she had bidding on people. And of course, I'm going, can I be interviewed? Like that. I couldn't, it's like, I can't resist that kind of stuff. So she interviewed me. She asked me some questions. And it was the most amazing interview. It's really, when I was doing it, I just started laughing. And, and so did everybody else that was listening. And that it came out on that video clip, and it's on my email and on my newsletter, the last one I sent, Getting to Know Mark. And I tell a story of how when I was down, I was feeling kind of down, and this friend of mine that I've known for years, he said, look in the mirror and go, I got you, babe. And that's kind of what I did. I looked in the mirror. And I had tears in my eyes, and I looked in the mirror, tears in my eyes, and I went, I got you, babe. And I just started laughing. And I'm big in playfulness. And, in my book, The Soul of Uncertainty, there's a whole chapter called Your Magical Playground, about a magical playground. Imagine your life as if it's a magical playground. and what would that be like? And you know, this idea, make your life a magical playground.
I love that. And then you go into the idea of the movie of your life, and there's just a lot of reflective moments in this fable. And I'm curious, and I see the hero's journey really, really clearly in this book. And I'm curious how or why you decided to create it as a fable, as a hero's journey, which is very different than a nonfiction book. And I actually think it's more powerful because the storytelling reaches the part of our brain, you know, the right side of our brain that is more emotional. And so it does get into your subconscious and it stays with you longer than maybe just a nonfiction, here are the statistics, facts, you know, tools and techniques. Was this something that you came up with, or did a coach lead you to this? How was sort of the fable idea? Where did that come from? I think it's brilliant. Well,
that was really where, I think I told you I had a guest on my radio show who did that fable idea. And of course, you know, I read a book called The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, which is a fable, and The Alchemist. So a lot of, you know, people compared my book to The Alchemist, and the idea of a young man in search of his dream meets, you know, his teacher, which is The Alchemist. And so I like the idea. I think that's how we learn, is through story, through fable. And So I just didn't want to write another self-help book. I wanted to write something that was more memorable. And you know what? It was more challenging, much more challenging than writing a nonfiction book. So that's why I did it. And in the process, I became such a better writer. And you know what's interesting is, on this book, I have a nice Kirkus review, which, as you know, is a major book reviewer. And I still have a desire to become a better writer and to work on my craft and I look at writing in a different way. But so anyway, the idea of the fable absolutely is to use metaphor. And of course, you know, with a book, you're using a big metaphor, big fable. And I mean, it's just more challenging. It's more fun. And as you know, we use the word playful. It's you get to play more. And I'm big, by the way, into, I'm glad you offered, you know, that playfulness as a point of takeoff here. I just think that, and you know, it's interesting too, because my best friend that I met in this workshop in 1982, Men, Sex, and Power, he builds playgrounds. And what's fun about a fable is you can start to introduce people in your life. You know, they become characters. So my friend that I met in this workshop, I call him in the book, his name's Kurt, and I call him in the book Curtis Henry. And so he comes in and out of the story, and he builds playgrounds. He still does. And so in a way, I thought about when we're kids, that going to the playground, you're in your own world, you know, you're in your own world. And so I'm trying to pick that up in the book as we're talking about, to read a little bit, you know, from that chapter.
I love coming up with a title during the interview that kind of captures the essence of the interview. And I think it's usually a little bit towards the end I come up with it, but I kind of like the idea of saying, treat life as a playground. Like, that'll be the title of this interview. And we'll go a little bit more into the playfulness theme. And then I want to finish with a little bit of a review of the process, because you've mentioned a couple things in this interview that perhaps aspiring authors don't even know about. So yes, Kirkus is a review, and getting reviews for your book is a really important process of getting your book marketed to the world. And you also mentioned earlier in the interview, advanced reader copies, which are ARCs. So folks, when you hear that, that means that these are the really early, before the book is proofread, these books are printed and they're sent out to reviewers, they're sent out to influencers. I want to kind of get into the playfulness and then kind of finish with, this is the process that you went through to write the book. And then we'll tie it together by saying, how do we make that process fun? Because it is a lot of work. right? And I know I'm going to ask the question of how long this took, this process. And so if it's going to be an investment of anywhere from 9 months to several years, we have to make sure that we're having fun along the way. So that's kind of where we'll be going, is playfulness, yeah, process, and how to make sure we're having, yeah, fun.
Can I just read you one thing here?
Yes,
this is
please.
From that chapter. Imagine thinking of your life as a magical playground, a life in which you are in the moment, flowing with what is, dancing on the river of life's adventure. This playground starts in your mind. It's in how you think. Imagine you're about to enter a whole new world of creation and a possibility. Of course, you enter at your own risk. You'll never be the same again. To remind you how amazing this could be, see the following words. They are written in white on a poster with a black background surrounded by gold trim. To dream again, to dare again, to feel enjoyment and happiness again, or for the first time, to realize, ah, this is living. That's from the chapter, The Soul of Uncertainty, The Magical Playground.
So dream and dare, and that's the path to happiness, right? If we can't
dream again, to dare again, to feel enjoyment and happiness again, or for the first time, to realize, this is living.
And can we incorporate that into a book writing process and publishing process? Can we have a playground experience with our book creation process? What do you think?
Yes, absolutely. And that's the whole idea, is how do you make your own playground? And that's kind of what I did. And the way I did it was that what I do when I write, I love to listen to music. And so what I do is I listen to music with headphones. So I go to Pandora is what I do. Listen to Pandora, and it can be anywhere. And I put on the headphones, and it could be, for example, I took my car in to get it serviced, and they said take a couple hours. So I went to a Starbucks, took my laptop. You put on the headphones of Pandora. I'm listening while I'm writing. So I always listen to what I'm writing, and the kind of music I listen to, it changes depending on my mood. And it might be that I'm, in a reflective mood. It might be that I want to be upbeat. I could go from listening to Glenn Gould, who was a classical piano player, to John Lee Hooker, the famous blues player, or to Ziggy Marley. So it varies on my mood, but I try to make it as fun as you can, to make it like an experience. And I always say to people, because some people say, well, I don't feel inspired to write. I mean, a lot of people say that. I don't feel very inspired to write. I don't know what I'm going to say. And what I suggest to people is writing is a process of discovery. So a lot of times I will write because I'm curious. So I was at a talk one time, at a lecture, and the speaker was talking about perfection and control, which is her perspective. So I thought, that would be an interesting conversation to explore. So I wrote one of my newsletters. I called it Perfection and Control. And so I sat down, and I just started writing. And I get into that process, but I don't write necessarily for hours. I'm not a big, person to write for hours. What I do is that, very rarely can I sit for more than like 45 minutes or an hour. And then I'll get up, I'll walk around, and then sit back down. I won't like take a long break, but probably very rarely was there a day that I wrote more than a couple hours. I just didn't, because I, especially with fiction, you're thinking about new ideas and concepts, and like with the character, what I loved about my book, by the way, were some of the characters I came up with, like Curtis Henry. And then, in astrology, there is a character in the book I call Edie the Astrologer. And one of the, and so with the humor, the playfulness, that, like, to make it playful, I talk about this idea, how a lot of people are into, well, what's your sign, All right, what's your sign? So it turns out that Scorpio, I had a certain amount of interactions with Scorpio, with different lovers and a best friend, and my daughter is a Scorpio. So I decided for the book, I would call this one female character Scorpia instead of Scorpio. I don't know. To me, that just seemed humorous. And then, so that's where that idea came from. Then the main character, Buddy, is going to go back to college. And one of my daughters thought about going to an alternative college. And they had actually grown up, went to like an alternative school, Waldorf school. So anyway, I decided the college that he goes, the alternative college, is really, I call it the University of the Curious. And stuff like that, I was playful in the writing. Of course, you know, that's part of, you can still talk about tragic moments, but, you know, playfulness is such an important part to, such an important thing to integrate into your life. You have to be willing to, you know, to be playful. Otherwise, life can just seem really mean and cruel and hard and harsh. And it doesn't mean if you're playful, these things aren't going to happen. You're not going to experience those dark moments. But the important thing is not to really avoid those moments, but to experience the joy and the laughter and the love and allow these good times in. And so often when we're struggling, we don't really allow those good times in. And that's why I like that clip that I did about, you know, you look in the mirror and you go, I got you, babe. And you know, it's hard to do that. I'm curious to see afterwards if you did that, if you could do it without laughing.
And I've heard about that mirror exercise in all these different ways, but I've never heard it that way, which is that playful, I got you, babe. That's great. I've heard it. Yeah. You know, I've heard, I love you. There's different affirmations but that's a more playful way of looking at it. So I'm going to summarize a couple of the tips that you gave to kind of having more playfulness in your writing journey. And you talked about, you know, inspiration through music, and it was so interesting to hear that you had such a diverse set of genres, you know, classical, blues, reggae. You know, I was just thinking you were going to say some of the, like, my son listens to, like, he'll go onto YouTube and he'll find music that inspires your brain waves to be more creative. Like, there's actually some, like, sort of new age music that he listens to that he can study to. So people, you know, be creative, and music can be inspirational. Be curious. Chunk it down. You talked about 45 to 60 minute button chair sessions. That's what I call them, and that, which I don't love. In fact, I was thinking, gosh, you'd be a great candidate for the folks that write their books as they walk. So I've heard a lot of people are starting to just go for long walks, and they take a recording device and they record their first draft. And of course, there's a lot of editing that needs to be done because they're just kind of doing a little bit more of a stream of conscious, but it can be done through, you know, first creating a structure and an outline, and then prompts and or trigger sentences, and then talking the book. And then you talk about, you also finished with kind of laughing and loving through the process. So how long, Mark, with keeping in mind for listeners that if you're, you know, working on this a couple hours a day, or as few as 45 minutes, how long did the whole process take so that someone can kind of go, okay, I could sign up for that, or no, I don't want to?
Well, it depends. I mean, it depends on the type of book. When I did Dancing on the River, I had, you know, Dancing on the River, a lot of the material for that, which was nonfiction, came from my newsletters. And once I committed to writing that book, Dancing on the River, I probably had my, you know, I probably 15 months later had my first book signing. But I had, it was nonfiction, and, you know, a lot of the ideas were already formulated. And also, you know, you finish a draft, and I didn't start writing, you know, right after I finished the draft. I let time elapse before I would start a second draft, right? So that went quicker, but Soul of Uncertainty, a lot of it was about the cover. You know, what kind of cover do I want? And you know, reaching out to agents and publishers and that kind of stuff. And time would go on where I really wouldn't be doing a whole lot. and or when I was maybe I'd be thinking more about the cover and exploring that, and I worked, you know, I had editors and cover designers and all that kind of stuff, but still you're very intimately involved. So I started in September 2014, and you know there were delays where you didn't do anything, but by January of this year, you know, it was done. It was done for all practical purposes.
And I think you can't rush creativity. I mean, that's something that people can kind of take away, is it can take, I mean, you said 15 months from, you know, writing to book signing. That's instant gratification in the world of writing. So, you know, that's one example, but also just realizing, and it's a little bit easier to bite off if you know that you can, by using the tips that we just talked about, have fun along the way, and then it's not a burden. It's actually part of this playful journey. So I'm going to give everybody your website. So if people are interested in more information about you and your book and your life coaching and all the things that you're doing to help people and inspire people, that's at inspirepossibility.com. And is there any question that I didn't ask that you'd love to answer in closing?
Well, you did such a great job. I can't think of anything you didn't ask. You did a fabulous job. I really appreciate our time together, and hopefully, you know, some of your listeners will be inspired, and I know I'm inspired by this conversation. I just love the way that you took the talking points out of our conversation, and the back and forth was perfect.
Oh, that's so wonderful. And I think what we can close with then is a really important lesson to those aspiring authors out there, that one of the best things about your journey, whether it's getting to a book or just working with your creativity and having fun, is the people that you meet along the way. And so this conversation is just one example of that. And you plant seeds as you go. So Mark, what I hope we did today is we planted the seed of a Sun Valley reunion at some point. If you've been here before and know how gorgeous it is, and it is this vortex, they say, of creativity, let's put it out there as an intention to get together and celebrate the people and the relationships that you meet and that you make along the way.
Sounds like a plan to me. What's interesting, by the way, I don't want to say how my book ends, but we talk about, you know, experience in the future. The date is 2020. We put out in terms of like a kind of a way to, you know, a vision of the future and coming together. And, you know, what I say, I think it's a good way to end our conversation, is, you know, when we're reaching out and planting seeds, and I totally agree with you, like some of the people that we get to meet along the way, like especially with the radio show. I mean, I've had conversations with people that would have never, ever happened, you know, if it wasn't for, you know, the work I do. And that's the real gift. But I like to think of it as we're gathering our tribe of kindred souls. That's what we're doing by this process. We never know where they're going to be, but if we're really are true to ourselves, and we're the best you, best us we can be, then we're going to attract these other kindred souls, and it's amazing how they show up. I'm surprised all the time, which just makes it exciting.
I love that. So enjoy the journey, folks, and gather your tribe. Thank you so much for joining us today, Mark. And again, I hope that we keep in touch and keep on enjoying that journey.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark, or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.